Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today with my guest, Tom Haberstroh, we're talking about the latest injury news with Kawhi Leonard out for an indefinite period of time, Lonzo Ball's return, a new story on the Bucks drama, and then we go through title tiers for this upcoming season. All that coming up next. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. I'm back again today with Yahoo Sports contributor Tom Haberstroh. What's going on, Tom?
I am pumped. I am jacked for this episode again, KOC. It's great to be back.
All right. So later on, we're going to talk about your title tiers for this upcoming season, championship contenders. But first, let's knock out the headlines. Tom, do you want to start with the good news or the bad news? Because we got a lot of injury news to discuss today.
Let's start with the bad news, and then we'll have a little chaser of good.
Sure. Let's start with the bad news. Shams Charania reported on Thursday morning. We're recording this at 4:11 p.m. East Coast time on Thursday, for what it's worth. Shams Charania reported that Kawhi Leonard is going to be out indefinitely with inflammation in his right knee. We already knew that Kawhi was going to miss the rest of preseason. Now we know that Kawhi is going to be out until who knows when. This injury started back in March when he missed the final 8 regular season games. He missed 4 of 6 playoff games for the Clippers in the first round as well. Tom, I feel like for LA right now, you lose Paul George, you sign some role players, now you're without Kawhi Leonard. Unless James Harden's going to be turning back the clock to his MVP seasons, there's a chance that he individually could miss the playoffs for the first time in his career. And for the Clippers, it's looking like in this loaded Western Conference that they're a favorite now to miss the play-in entirely. Is there any reason for optimism right here with the Clippers at all? Or are you feeling as pessimistic as I am?
Steve Ballmer is opening up in a new arena with a wall.
That's cool.
That's exciting, right? It's starting to feel KOC.
A lot of bathrooms. It's a cool screen. I'm going to see David Gilmour, the guitarist from Pink Floyd, there in a couple of weeks. I'm very excited. The arena looks cool.
Yeah. Is Kawhi going to be there too? If he's not going to be playing, he might be checking out.
Maybe he'll be in the suite.
Yeah, I'm optimistic that it's going to be a fun time at the new arena, but I got to say it's starting to feel a little bit like when the Golden State Warriors opened up Chase Center and then everybody got hurt and they had a 15-win season and then, oh, COVID happened as well. So this is bad vibes all around, and it makes me remember the column I wrote for Yahoo over the summer when Paul George signed with the Sixers. I was like, the NBA is a big 5 league now. It's not a big 3 league. And if you look at the numbers of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, they played 26 games over 5 seasons in the playoffs together. 26 games, that's it. And they just could not get healthy on the same page at the same time for when they were having these, you know, postseason runs. And now it's looking like the Clippers are going to have an all-time terrible opening for their new arena. And James Harden might average 30 points a game on a 20-win team. That's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, and I think the issue with Harden is, you know, like maybe Harden can turn back the clock a bit. He was better with the Clippers to close the season than he was at any time with Philadelphia earlier in the year. He looked like a better version of himself. He's going to have Zubats as a screener. I think that combination, like I talked about with Dan Titus on our podcast earlier in the week, they'll be potent together. But the Western Conference is just so deep. It is so strong. And there's going to be at least one good team that's going to miss the play-in, not just the playoffs, but going to miss the play-in. And for the Clippers, they were already kind of on that bubble as a play-in team. And your title tiers, you didn't even have them as you ranked the teams 1 to 5 stars. You didn't even have the Clippers listed as one of the teams that you would have as a title contender. And that was before this news. And the scary thing as you're a Clippers fan right now, and you know this if you're a Clippers fan, because of the Paul George trade, you're trapped. You can't decide, oh, we'll trade Harden. We'll tank it out. We'll go try to get Cooper Flagg. You don't have your lottery pick. The Thunder do. And I say lottery pick as if it's a given, as if it's going to happen. But you don't have your first round draft pick that's going to Oklahoma City. So for the Clippers here, man, like you're without your picks. You don't have the ability to bottom out if you want to. It's feeling like you're just betting on James Harden and Zubats to just be dominant together. And that be enough for you to get through it until Kawhi can return at who knows when.
Yeah, and Kawhi, remember this summer when he was supposed to go to Paris and then they decided not to bring him, and Lawrence Frank came out and was like, that's BS. Like, he should be on that team. I was really disappointed to see that he was left home. And now it's gotten even worse, is that he didn't play in Paris and still he's out indefinitely, which is really, really scary for his long-term prospects. If this is, you know, best case scenario from this offseason, that he didn't go to Paris and he was rehabbing, getting ready for the season, and he's still not ready.
Yeah, it's terrible news for the Clippers. We mentioned the Thunder, how they have the Clippers first round draft pick this year. That's good news for them. Bad news for the Thunder, though. Isaiah Hartenstein, their newly acquired center, he's going to be out for 5 to 6 weeks. He was diagnosed with a non-displaced fracture in his left hand. Not a major injury. He'll be back at some point. But tough start for the Thunder to start the year, at least without Hartenstein, because you're already out without Jalen Williams. Now you might be relying on possibly a rookie like Dylan Jones, maybe to play some small ball 5 minutes off your bench. But at the least, I think we're going to see a lot of this team with Chet Holmgren at the five to start the season with Hartenstein out.
Yeah, one of the more underrated storylines of last season with OKC was the fact that they were so healthy. They were one of the healthiest teams in the NBA. Just you look up and down the roster, they did not suffer a major injury. And that medical staff was outstanding in keeping Chet Holmgren on the floor for 82 games after a Liz Frank injury the year before. So, you know, we'd like to think that that stuff carries over into the next season, that if you're healthy one season, the medical staff is strong, the sports science staff is strong. It doesn't always carry over into the next year. And one of the risks you have is that you bring in this new player, you sign him to a big contract, you don't have all of the information medically, and you're hoping that that good health continues. Well, in this case, Isaiah Hartenstein gets that non-displaced hand fracture, and he's going to be out for 5 to 6 weeks. That is, you know, a bummer, but we do know that last year without Hartenstein, they were great in the regular season. They do need him ready for the postseason. The hope is that this injury will not have any long-term effects, because this is, you know, for the Oklahoma City Thunder, this is a regular season, but most people are going to be waiting to see what they look like come May and June.
Absolutely, for sure. And I think for Oklahoma City, like, having him miss a little bit of time is not a big deal. I mean, it would have been nice to have him out there for opening night. He's going to miss two games against the Nuggets. Would have been very valuable to have him against Jokic. But at the same time, if there's a Thunder-Nuggets playoff series in May, it doesn't matter that he's missing the time now. They're going to still going to win a lot of games. We did get news about Paul George after he had his knee bent in a scary fashion earlier in the week.
Wait, when's the good news coming?
Well, KOC. I mean, this could be good news. It's good-ish news. Paul George, okay. He has no structural damage, just a bone bruise. Sigh of a relief for the Sixers, but at the same time, like, you get Embiid already out. Now you have Paul George with a knee issue. He's iffy for opening night next week for Philadelphia. So it's good-ish that it's not a long-term injury for Paul George, but at the same time, you don't want to be getting your Sixers tenure started off like this. It's just more scary injuries for Philadelphia fans to deal with.
That was my reaction to when they got Paul George in the first place. I was like, this is good-ish. Like, if he's healthy, like, this is great. But he's 34 years old. He's a guy who hasn't been able to be dependent on health-wise in the postseason in quite some time. And you're already dealing with Joel Embiid missing the entire preseason and saying, I'm not playing any more back-to-backs in the schedule. Remember last year, the NBA with Joe Dumars was saying, like, hey, there's no evidence to suggest that playing in back-to-backs raises your injury risk. Well, Joel Embiid is basically saying, I don't believe that. I'm not playing in any more back-to-backs. And on top of that, they get Paul George with this hyperextension. It looked a lot worse. You're right. Yeah. It was better news than what we were expecting. When you're watching that film, it was really ugly. And so, yes, this is good news from the standpoint that we were expecting him to be on a longer timetable, but still opening the season in Philly with your star player dealing with a bone bruise in his knee with all of his history of injury issues, this is not a great start. And again, I'm going to refer to that column I wrote. This is a Big Five league, and as excited I am about the Big Three that they formed in Philly, I just don't think that they have the depth of the stars that you need in order to compete at the very top. And so, yeah, Daryl Morey is going to have more assets at his disposal to go out and find another big-time player. But right now, this Philly team looks very shorthanded to start the season. I hope they catch up.
Enough bad news. Let's move on to the good news. Lonzo Ball, Tom. Lonzo Ball is back. returned to the floor earlier this week, 10 points on 4 of 6, hit his first shot, a three-pointer. He made some beautiful passes, made some headsy defensive plays. Lonzo looked like Lonzo Ball. It was his first game since January 14th, 2022. He had arthroscopic knee surgery. He had his meniscus replaced. He had a cartilage transplant, some rare random surgery that not many people have undergone that are NBA players. And here he is. He's back. Lonzo Ball looked good. I'm shocked he looked as good as he did, Tom.
Me too. And I love it. This is my favorite storyline entering the season because players don't come back from this type of layoff. They don't. 2 years plus away from the game dealing with what looked like a potentially career-ending knee injury, and just they could not figure it out. Just he was traveling the globe trying to find specialists to figure out what was going on with his knee, and I didn't expect this to, you know, for him to look as good. I'll tell you the play that I loved seeing the most. It wasn't the three in the corner. It wasn't the passes. It wasn't the pull-ups. It was him diving for a loose ball, saving a loose ball going out of bounds into the Chicago Bulls defense. I mean, the bench. KOC, that tells me so much that he was willing not just to go get the ball, but to like dive into the stands to go save that ball for his team. Because mentally, when we see guys who are coming back from an injury like that, they're timid. Like you always hear about guys who hurt their ankles, and when they go up and dunk, it's not that they're worried about going up and dunking, it's landing, because you're worried mentally. You've got this hitch in your mind that you're gonna land on someone. With Lonzo Ball, he didn't have any of that. No signs of any sort of fear or any signs of apprehension about going into such a high risky play of diving out of bounds to save a ball. And I got to say, you know, this is a guy who has battled injuries his entire career. The big baller brand thing, I do think had an impact on his injury rates in the NBA. The shoes, I did not like that coming out of college and basically having his own startup shoe brand with his family. And I do think some of that contributed to the injuries. And I do think that Lonzo Ball has put that all behind him and is all about getting himself back on the floor. And he looked awesome.
Yeah, he looked tremendous. And like you said, the dive for the loose ball says a lot. A lot of guys don't go for it, especially it's just a preseason game. But I felt like Lonzo looked like his normal self. The connective ability, just the life he brings to the floor. Like for the Bulls, they're a better team with him. By the way, they were 27-13, the number one seed in the East at the time that he got injured in 2022. I'm not saying Lonzo Ball is going to make them suddenly a good team in the East, but he makes them more competitive. He makes them more watchable. He makes those young guys better on that team too.
Yeah, KOC, when you look at the pace leaders in the preseason, and there is some evidence to suggest that the way you play in the preseason does carry over, even though it's a handful of games, there is a correlation going into the regular season about how fast you play. The Chicago Bulls are the fastest team in the NBA by pace factor in the preseason, and a lot of that is exciting for Lonzo Ball. That is the game he wants to play, up-tempo basketball. And so is this sustainable? I don't know. Do they want Lonzo Ball playing 30 minutes a night and a high-paced, frenetic atmosphere? I'm not so sure right out of the gates. But the Chicago Bulls are playing an interesting up-tempo playing style in the preseason, and that fits perfectly with Lonzo Ball's, you know, general where he's most effective. I mean, think about how long it's been, KOC, since he's played. It's been 2+ years. I wrote down a few of these things that were happening in the NBA the last time Lonzo Ball played. And I want you to tell me which one's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
I've got the Suns starting lineup was Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Jay Crowder, and DeAndre Ayton. That's how long ago it was when Lonzo Ball was playing in the NBA. The Spurs backcourt was DeJounte Murray and Derek White.
Wow. That was that long ago.
They were the backcourt for the Spurs the last time Lonzo Ball was playing. KD, Kyrie, and James Harden were still in their like scary hours phase of the Brooklyn Nets. That was still happening when Lonzo Ball last played in January of 21 or 22. And then LeBron James, this one actually doesn't work. LeBron James was averaging 25, 7, and 7, which he still is doing.
Still is.
still somehow.
You're gonna get called a LeBron stan for that one.
I just had to throw it in there because it is the most ridiculous thing that he's continuing to do. I thought Lonzo Ball's career was over, and yet LeBron James is still doing these things.
It's crazy. I mean, I think, you know, first of all, it's crazy. Where has the time gone? Like, that was that long. Oh, Jay Crowder's not even in the NBA right now. Ayton shooting threes in Portland. Good for him finally shooting threes. It's fascinating to think about with Lonzo Ball, if he's able to sustain success this year, if he's able to be on the floor regularly, I wonder if he becomes suddenly an appealing trade guy. Because if you're the Bulls, you just invested in Josh Giddey, similar type of player with the passing ability, Ball being the older player without, in theory, having the future there for a younger Bulls team. I wonder if Lonzo Ball becomes somebody that teams look at and say, why would we not want this feisty defender with size and passing ability and knockdown shooting ability? Because I was worried that he'd come back and somehow the shot would be gone, that all the improvements he made in the NBA after years away, it might have faded from him. But the shot looks lethal still, like it did prior to the injury.
Yep.
Why wouldn't Lonzo be a guy that a team would want to go out and get? People are talking about Zach LaVine maybe as a Lakers trade target. Why wouldn't Lonzo Ball be a Lakers trade target for a return there?
And he's $21 million expiring deal. So it's not like you're committing long term. If the injury creeps up, like, it's an expiring deal. So I love that idea.
100%. In that other game, in that same game on the other side, Julius Randle made his Wolves debut. It was a very Julius Randle game. It was typical Julius Randle. He had 15 points on 12 shots, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, with size, playmaking. We know he does that. He also had a play where he was complaining to the officials and he didn't get back on defense. I know Knicks fans will not miss seeing Julius Randle do that. Typical Julius Randle game. I don't want to read too much into such a small sample with the spacing, but what were your first impressions from what you saw with Randle on the Wolves?
KOC, same thing with Lonzo Ball. He didn't seem bothered by the shoulder injury at all. He was playing bully ball. Julius Randle attacked the rim and just, like, Josh Giddey would be lining up against him and he would just pulverize him trying to get to the rim. This is the kind of basketball that Julius Randle was accustomed to before the injury. And I was curious, you know, would he be a little bit, you know, flaky, you know, trying to, you know, make his impact on this new team? Would he try to pull up for threes or just play a little soft as he's acclimating into the offense? Nuh-uh. He was as forceful as you've seen Julius Randle. He didn't take any threes in this game. He did a lot of, you know, show and then drive. But I do think that Julius Randle, he's got the t-shirt under his jersey. He's got this new look. That's the only thing that looked different with his game. He's got the Anthony Davis, the Kentucky connection, wearing the t-shirt like it's 1992. I love that. And I do think that the Minnesota Timberwolves, they're going to have a little bit more spacing. I'm curious to see how that shot looks. Is he not taking the three because of the shoulder, or is it just his debut? He wasn't looking for that. I'm curious to see if he's willing to space the floor and how effective he can be as a spacer. But then you look at the fact that Anthony Edwards had 16 three-pointers and DDV had 13 three-pointers in that game in short playing time. So maybe they're not getting the three-point spacing from their bigs, but they're certainly getting it from Dante DiVincenzo and Ant.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it almost looked like Ant went into that game saying, I'm just going to take threes today. I'm just going to practice taking threes. That's what it looked like to me watching that game. Like, he wasn't looking for some of his normal shots in that game. Let's talk about the Bucks. We have some drama already. Sam Amick over at The Athletic published a story earlier in the week about Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks. He spent time with them when they were in Southern California for training camp. And he opened the story talking about how when he interviewed Giannis, a Bucks staffer walked by and Giannis asked the staffer, if we don't win this year, would you get fired? Do you have it in the back of your mind this year if things don't go well? And that quote was in the story within the context of the quote that went viral all over social media. And this quote was, if we don't win a championship, I might get traded. Giannis went on to say, it's the profession that we're in. At any moment, if you don't succeed, that might be it for us. It was the same way with the previous coaching staff and the year before, the players before. If you don't do a good enough job, you're out. Now, I want to be clear. like Giannis has made comments like this in the past. He said it in the context of the Olympics. He said it in context of the Bucks before signing some of his extensions. He said things in this spirit before. However, the fact he's saying it now, following three seasons in which they've lost in the semifinals and then twice in the first round with three different head coaches, and now they have one of the oldest teams in the NBA with one of the most expensive rosters in the NBA, it does seem a little more serious to me saying this now at this point entering this season. What do you think, Tom?
Well, first, I want to say great job by Sam Amick of The Athletic to get this story. This is why we need beat writers in every shoot-around, practice facility, games. This is why you have beat writers, is that they're there for when comments like this happen and they can write it down and then it's a story. Because Giannis obviously is saying this for a reason. There's a reason why he's saying this with an earshot of reporters. He's been in the league long enough and been around the whole palace intrigue of the NBA to know that I want this to get out there. He wants people to know
100%.
That,
yes. He's not stupid.
What, right? Not stupid. And yes, Giannis can be a little childish with some of his remarks in the post-game press conferences, and just he seems like a little kid sometimes. But this doesn't feel like that. You're right. This has happened before, but when you're looking at Chris Middleton and his injury issues, and you're looking at new ownership, remember, this is a team that when you have a new owner, usually they come in with their vision of the long-term future. And if things are going sideways, this is a situation that other executives who are going big game hunting, they are watching this scenario that's playing out in Milwaukee to set the stage. Giannis is already talking about or joking about, you know, blowing this thing up or being, fungible in this entire ecosystem in Milwaukee. So Chris Middleton has to be healthy for them to compete. They don't have the depth, I think, to compete at the highest levels in the East. But Giannis Antetokounmpo, if there's a reason why Golden State or Houston or other teams, Oklahoma City, other teams that are just sitting on these picks and assets, young players, it's for guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo, for when he decides or when the organization decides to hit the nuclear option button, that they are going to have the assets to pull off such a deal. And I do think that Giannis, that name just got a little bit circled a little bit more around front offices around the league.
I mean, that's 100% true, without a doubt. Like, I think teams are going to be looking at that more. They're going to be thinking about it more as a possibility. You mentioned Houston. They have the picks they had. You know, they tried to go for Kevin Durant earlier this year, Woj had reported. Of course, Oklahoma City with their big pile of picks that are sitting on, including that Clippers pick this year. And the Warriors as well. They have some picks, but they also have Kuminga, who's improved. They have pods. They have some players. If the Bucks were a team that said, we want an immediate player, not just theoretical future picks. So I don't know for sure if it's going to get to that point. I'm a bit more optimistic about this Bucks team this year, in part because of how Damian Lillard has looked in preseason. Lillard looks like he's ready for a comeback year. He looks completely healthy to me. He looks like his full self. We saw him already have a comeback year before. With Portland, he had the abdomen injury. He had surgery on that. The following year, he came back. This is the year before he was traded to the Bucks. He had the most efficient, highest volume scoring season of his entire career. Dame was tremendous his final year in Portland. He says this past year with Milwaukee, he wasn't in the best of shape. He went through a divorce. He changed locations for the first time in his career. And he just seems pretty open and transparent that these are the reasons why he wasn't good last year. He wasn't seeing his kids. He wasn't part of his family anymore. But now he looks like Damian Lillard again. So I think for the Bucks this year, Giannis is still an elite talent. Dame is looking more like the Damian Lillard we've come to expect, the Bucks expected when they traded for him. And this defense, I'm withholding judgment. It's really going to come down to the defense, in my opinion, if the Bucks can be a serious contender or not. And your title tiers, you had them as a two-star title contender, not a five-star favorite, but a two-star title contender. Defense is going to be the key to me, Tom, because what we're seeing in preseason is way more switching, but that's leading to a lot of cross matches. And in that Bulls game, I watched that one closely because that was the first time we saw Giannis and Brooke and Dame all on the court at the same time. They were helping a lot off of defense, leaving open shooters and that led to a lot of, I think, offensive boards for the Bulls as well. It just seemed disorganized, but I'm not overreacting because it's just preseason, but it's just stuff to look for after they really slipped on defense last year. Do you see the Bucks potentially becoming like one of those four-star, five-star contenders, like a favorite in the Eastern Conference again? Or are you more leaning towards the side of, hey, maybe come February, we're talking about, hey, the Thunder, should they offer 10 first-round picks for Giannis Antetokounmpo?
So last year, I started these title tiers at TomTheFinder.com. Every week, Monday mornings, I would put these five-star, four-star tiers of all the contenders. And the team that I was like more bullish than most of my readers was the Milwaukee Bucks. And the reason is because with Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton, and Giannis on the floor, they were plus 17.5 every 100 possessions net rating. 17
despite
and a half
all their
points.
Issues, despite all of them last year, still dominant.
And it's with the whole Adrian Griffin fiasco.
Yes.
Like that was like, this is a team that when those three guys are healthy, they are on paper a five-star title contender. But how often can they play together is the big question. Again, it's a big five league, not a big three league anymore. And you need to have multiple guys that can contribute at a high level. And I just don't see it with Milwaukee right now. They have a couple interesting young players that can pop potentially this season, but I don't think they're ready yet to enter into that stratosphere that Chris Middleton has occupied for the last 5 years with the Bucks, is borderline all-star, all-NBA potential. And I think Chris Middleton and the injury question mark with him, and the fact I don't like the whole switching idea when you have Brook Lopez at this stage of his career, I want him in that drop coverage, but I don't know if that's, you know, with everyone taking more threes in the NBA, if that's what you want to do in modern NBA basketball.
It's an interesting philosophical dilemma here for the Bucks, because earlier in the year, in the summer, there are rumors that, hey, maybe the Bucks want to move on from Brook Lopez, that they want to have an identity shift. They didn't move on from Brook, but Doc Rivers has talked all training camp about this identity shift on defense, how they want to change things and do things that they haven't done before. So I wonder if maybe there is part of the Bucks that does want to trade a Brook Lopez or change things up entirely, and that Milwaukee becomes a team that before the trade deadline, they end up trading players away. Because I don't think, I'd be shocked. Like, I don't think this is going to be the year that we get Giannis trade rumors in February. If anything, it would wait until next summer. I just don't see it happening this year. The Bucks are going to try to do everything they can to try to win a championship mm-hmm. this year. But then again, if Sam Presti calls and says, hey, we'll give you 12 first-round draft picks and Isaiah Hartenstein and as salary filler, and, oh, we'll give you some young guys too. You want Usman Cheng? Sure, you can take him. Here you go.
Sure.
I mean, if that's the case, if you're the Bucks front office, maybe you have a meeting at least. But I don't see it getting to that point as a Milwaukee Bucks organization.
Yeah, we just saw the Minnesota Timberwolves look at Karl Anthony Towns' money and try to get off of that as soon as they could this offseason. So I don't think it's going to be quite the same situation as they had in Minnesota. There's Cat is not Giannis. Giannis is arguably, on his best days, the best player in the NBA, both ends of the floor, automatically a contender if he's healthy. So I don't think that Milwaukee, I'm betting against Milwaukee trading Giannis this season, but I do think that those comments from Sam Amick that he reported, it just inched a little bit from like a 1% mm-hmm. chance probably to like a 5% chance in my book.
I agree with you. Before we move on, just want to remind listeners to subscribe or follow the Kevin O'Connor Show wherever you get your podcast. Give us a 5-star rating if you're listening on Spotify. We just hit 150 reviews. I'd love us to get to 200. It really does help out the show. So give us that 5-star rating. It really does help. All right, Tom, over on your Substack, The Finder with Tom Haberstroh, you posted your title tiers, which you did all last season. You're bringing it back this year, and you ranked the title contenders 1 to 5 stars. 5 stars, those are the complete teams, the favorites, the one-star teams. You're saying there's a chance. Those are the one-star teams. Let's go through those, but let's start at the bottom with the 15 teams that you gave no stars, 0 stars. Those are the Atlanta Hawks, Brooklyn, Charlotte, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, LA Clippers, Memphis, New Orleans, Orlando, Portland, Sacramento, Toronto, Utah, and Washington. Those are the 15 teams you gave zero stars. Now, I agree with you on 14 of those teams.
Can I guess which one you're going to pick?
Yes, please. One of them, I think, should be a two-star team. Which team do you think that is?
Is it Zach Edey's team?
It is Zach Edey's team. It is Zach Edey's team. It is the Memphis Grizzlies because, look, I get the questions with John Morant. He's out right now. He needs to come back and he needs to stay healthy. He needs to stay on the floor for a myriad of different reasons. But they were a 56-win team and a 51 team with him. He was all NBA. Now you have Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. They're better. Bane, 25 years old, more playmaking than we saw from him when he was playing with Ja. Jaren Jackson Jr., more go-to scoring ability, more creation ability. He's a defensive player of the year. Their depth is better now than it was then. You have Marcus Smart, G.G. Jackson missing the start of the year, but he's come along really well. You have an elite shooter in Luke Kennard. And yes, then you have Zach Edey, the ultimate X factor. And we're already seeing the benefits of Zach Edey this entire preseason. He's scoring 1.18 points per post-up when he gets those opportunities. He's logging 5.5 post-ups in 20 minutes per game. If you look at all of last season, there are only 7 players that logged 5 or more post-ups per game. And Edey's doing it in only 20 minutes per game this preseason for the Grizzlies. Last year, those 7 players were Jokic, Embiid, AD, Şengün, Giannis, Randle, and Bam. The Nuggets scored 1.15 points per Jokic post-up. That was the best of those 7 guys. It's only preseason, small sample size, but 1.18 points per post-up by Edey for the Memphis Grizzlies this preseason. He's destroyed Miles Turner. He destroyed Nikola Vucevic. He destroyed smaller guys like Isaiah Jackson, made him look absolutely tiny. I just think this Grizzlies team, there's enough reasons for upside and belief. There's enough lanes for them to grow this year that Edey, even as a rookie, is going to be that major X factor who can help lift all of these established pieces to an even higher level. That's the way I feel about them, Tom.
When was the last time a rookie was a starting big-time contributor to a title team?
When's the last time there was a rookie who spent 4 years in college and was the greatest college players ever and is a dominant interior post player? I know people say the big man is back. It is in some regards big, but bigs have migrated to the perimeter. There are not many guys like Edey. Edey is an outlier in today's NBA. Him and Jokic really are outliers with their combination of size and strength and interior scoring ability. I don't want to put Edey in the Jokic class, to be fair. Jokic has every move in the book. Edey has like a right shoulder hook shot over a right-hand hook shot over the left shoulder. That's what Edey has. But it changes things for Memphis. It does.
It does. It does. He's been awesome in the preseason, and you and I were really high on him this offseason at the draft time. I think we both were believers about Zach Edey's potential in the NBA. I just think the injury question for me is the biggest reason why I kept them off this list. They're the most injured roster in NBA history last year. Ja Morant is already having a turned ankle that, you know, most players with a turned ankle, it's already scary. But with a guy with that kind of burst and that kind of jumping ability and springs, that ankle injury could potentially have more impact mentally than it is necessarily physically. We talked about that earlier. And then Zach Edey and Ja Morant, not the best fit in terms of playing style. If you're going to slow it down and give it to Zach Edey in the post with kind of some, you know, 80s, 90s ball, caveman basketball does not really, it's not synonymous with Ja Morant's game. So I understand the appeal of Zach Edey, but on this roster, it's a little bit confusing because he's such a paint-dwelling monster. You kind of want that space open for Ja Morant to get into the paint. That's where he's most effective. So I would almost like this team better if they had a starting big that could space the floor, kind of like a Brook Lopez, and then have Zach Edey come in for 15 points a game and just demolish second units.
So in other words, like if you'd rather see them with like the theoretical Derek Lively, he makes 1-3 in the finals for the Mavericks. You'd rather see them with the lob center who can occasionally space the floor. Kal-El Ware, this year drafted by the Miami Heat, he's more of a proven shooter. The thing with Edie, though, Tom, he hasn't made a three yet this preseason from Memphis, but he's a 70%+ guy from the free throw line.
Yep.
He has awesome touch on his hook shots and near the basket. I'm a believer in Edie becoming a solid catch and shoot guy. I'm a believer in Edie filling that Brook Lopez role where he can at least be 34% from three. I know he's a rookie center. I know it's very rare we see rookie centers make a big impact on teams that can go far, but the Mavericks just did it with Derek Lively last year. They lose in the finals, of course, but we've seen like rookies make impacts in postseasons, or young guys make impacts in the postseason. To me, Edie's one of those guys, and he's older. He comes in more experienced, mm-hmm. and he's also has Jaren Jackson flanking him on defense. On offense, he can run high pick and roll with Ja Morant. He can be that lob guy. He doesn't need to post up. He can just set screens all game. But the fact that he can be that mismatch hunter, I'm really bold. And maybe it's too much. Maybe it's too much belief in Zach Edey. But I think Zach Edey changes the whole complexion of that Grizzlies roster. And it won't be long until they're at least a one-star team on your list. At least a one-star team.
I'm starting with zero stars for them this season, but
Jaws
they're
out. Fair. Jaws out.
Jaws out. Jaren Jackson Jr. already had a hamstring issue in the preseason. Things have been bubbling up.
All and fair.
I just feel like the injury factor looms large for this team. And as excited I am about Zach Edey, to me, I'll believe it when I see it. When they're all healthy and playing together, then I'll start putting them into those tiers.
All right, the one-star teams you have are Houston, Indiana, Miami, and San Antonio. Miami, of course, they belong. San Antonio, I disagree. It's too early, but I'm not going to argue because Victor Wembanyama is a basketball god. Make the case to me for the Houston Rockets. Why are they included on your list right away?
Well, part of the reason why I have them as a one-star is the assets that they can put together to make a big swing trade. This having these tiers is not just about like how this roster looks right now. It's also about your ability to make a major move. Do you have the assets? Do you have the players and the actual appetite to do that? Last year, I put the Oklahoma City Thunder as a three-star title contender preseason, and people thought I was nuts. And I was like, not only are they young and they're very well coached, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander can be an MVP candidate. I also was big on the idea that they could make a huge addition at the trade deadline to raise their chances again. I think Houston is a lesser version of OKC last year. I think they're going to make a big leap this year. They've got a lot of young, great talent. And I think Fred VanVleet is just a savvy veteran that I think if Jalen Green can find his way on this roster, it can go a long way for them or potentially be moved for a ready now star. I think there's a lot of potential with this roster that the Houston Rockets can package two or three of their young guys and get a Kevin Durant or try to get a Giannis Antetokounmpo or, you know, James Harden's not going to be on the table. I just think that this team, Houston, KOC, is not only young enough and I think savvy enough. I love Reed Shepard. I wish he could play somehow 25, 30 minutes a game. I don't know where he's going to get those minutes.
I wish Reed Shepard could play 48 minutes a game.
Dude, I would be all for that. His shot isn't even falling and he's still making huge impacts on this team. Every time I watch that dude, I continue to believe that he's going to be an all-star, all-NBA caliber player in this league. He's got so much savvy. I wish they didn't have a logjam at the point guard position because I think he can do amazing things right away. He's not going to win a championship right away, but I do think that Reed Shepard is the type of player showing a lot of like CP3 savvy mid-range jumpers in this hunting for that mid-range while also having, as you've noted, like the greatest shooting percentages in college basketball history in terms of efficiency in the Synergy database. This is a guy who's going to be great day one. I just don't know if the roster, it's almost like they're too deep. You know what I'm saying, KOC? They've got almost too many players that I like, and I wonder if they're going to do a 3-for-1 or a 2-for-1 trade to go for a star that is a disgruntled star somewhere. And that's one of the reasons why I really like Houston is they're good enough to be like a 40 a 43 win team right now, but I do think that there's a lot of potential to move up into that upper tier if, say, Kevin Durant's just like, yo, I do want to go to Houston. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Houston, when it comes to trades this year, like Giannis is the pipe dream. KD is too, for that matter, but less so because of the Suns. They're a little bit more on thin ice. KD won't be a free agent next summer, but the summer after. So from the Sun side of things, his value would drop pretty quickly as soon as next offseason. So I think KD would be the most realistic star. Other than that, I don't foresee a guy out there that would make sense for Houston to really dump all of their assets. Like I can't think of anybody besides maybe Jimmy Butler, but at his age, are you really going to give a hell of a lot with his upcoming free agent status as well? I don't think you're going all in for Jimmy Butler either. If you're Houston, like, does anybody else come to mind when it comes to thinking about that best case for Houston, or is it just KD, you know, as the dream for them?
You know, Larry Markkanen, when he did that extension this summer, it ruined it.
Exactly, because now he can't be traded.
Can't be traded. The Rock. I mean, how many contenders could use a Larry Markkanen on their squad? You know, like, of course, he's an amazing shooter. I call him Big Clay. He's just, he's an amazing shooter, a guy who can put the ball on the deck. The thing about Larry Markkanen is, you know, I don't think he works on the Utah Jazz timeline. I think they're built to tank and go for Cooper Flagg, but he's too good for them to tank for a Cooper Flagg. And I just think that it would make so much sense for them, in Danny Ainge's vision, trading for draft picks and upgrading that cupboard for a potential, you know, superstar in the draft, whether this year or next year. But Larry Markkanen is just too good for that. And by making that extension, he basically pulled his name out of the Golden State Warriors, the Houston Rockets, any team that wanted to upgrade at the trade deadline with a star. Markkanen was the guy, and now he's off the table. So you're right. How many names are there potentially that Houston can swing right now to get into that title contender conversation?
There really isn't that many. I mean, who knows how the trade market ends up developing? Things can always change very, very quickly. But right now, looking around the market, I don't see a lot. And if anything, I think it ends up more like what we saw Indiana do last year. You have Indiana as a one-star title team. They go out and get Pascal Siakam at the before the deadline. And Siakam, very good player for them, but he's not a mega star that you're dumping a bunch of premier draft picks to go out and get. And the Pacers, you have them on your list. I think that's fair out of respect. They make an Eastern Conference Finals last year. They're a young team. They could be better. But for all the talk about Boston having an easy path to the finals, the Pacers did face the Bucks without Giannis. The Knicks lost OG Anunoby. They were having guys play 45 minutes a game. And then they got smacked by Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Pacers could get better. A lot of that's going to have to do with Tyrese Halliburton. Can he return to the first half of last season version of himself? But I think there's a real chance that the Pacers end up taking a step back this year as well.
Yeah, it's going to come down. For me, it's all about Tyrese Halliburton. If he's healthy and all NBA Tyrese Halliburton that we saw in the first half, like you said, they're in the conversation, because we didn't really get to see much of that with Siakam on the squad. But with Siakam and a healthy Tyrese and getting continued development from the rest of their rotation, I mean, have teams figured out the Indiana Pacers offense yet? Because yes, they did have a lot of fortune in the postseason with the injuries that they faced. I mean, the players they didn't face. But also, this was outside of the Boston Celtics that went roughshod against the NBA. They were the best offense in the NBA, even with a gimpy Tyrese Halliburton for much of the season. So to me, they have to get better defensively, but that's why I have them as a one star. Most Eastern Conference finalists are going to be in that 2-3-4 star caliber title contender. But to me, they're one star right now for me. And I agree with you. There's a very good chance that Memphis jumps into that picture, but Indiana has Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam on their roster. And if Tyrese is healthy, I think they're going to be in the picture.
At a minimum, they're going to be fun. They're going to be an incredibly fun team to watch. Reminder to listeners, we have a mailbag coming on Tuesday's episode. I want your predictions for this coming season, whether it's about the Pacers or the Bucks or the Lakers or the Sixers, whoever it is, send your predictions to KOCshow@yahoosports.com. We'll be answering those on Tuesday. All right, Tom, we're back talking about your title tiers. Your two-star teams you had listed were the Bucks, the Lakers, and the Sixers. I think all of those are very fair. AD and LeBron, both still amazing. Sixers made improvements, but the injury concerns are very real for them. We talked about the Bucks earlier with some of the pros and cons with them. Your three-star title teams, the Warriors, you made the case last week in our first episode together as them being a 50-win-plus team. They're undefeated so far in preseason right now. That prediction is looking pretty good so far. What have you seen from them so far in this preseason that I would assume has you feeling more and more confident in the Warriors this year?
That offense looks very good under Terry Stotts. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are firing them up. Over 50% of their shots this year or in the preseason so far are coming from the three-point line. Buddy Hield's firing up. Moses Moody is looking like Klay Thompson out there. This is a team that is, I think, you know, last year they were sixth in three-point rating, but this is supercharged. Like, they are going and playing up-tempo, throwing threes, and they're going with a team that, like, right now they're 5-0, and the last three times they were 5-0, they won championships. I'm not saying that this is a prediction that based on being 5-0, they're going to win it all this year, but Steph hasn't even looked good. And there's still the other guys, like Moses Moody looks so confident out there. And that was one of the things that they wanted to see from Moses Moody last year. Steve Kerr talking big time in the preseason about how Moses Moody looks like a different player. His disposition out there, looking for his shot. He has a 28% usage rate in the preseason. This is not the same Moses Moody we saw last year. And he's coming into a year with Kuminga. They're looking for extensions to potentially lock them in for long term. And they have not come to deals as of this recording. And I do think that Moses Moody, D'Anthony Melton, this guy is always, when he's healthy, he makes your team better. He's a savvy ball handler, scorer, shooter, passer, defender, one of the most underrated players in the league. Kyle Anderson. These are guys that I think the basketball IQ with the Golden State Warriors and Terry Stotts at the helm offensively, I just think they're a good 3-4 wins better than they were last year. And last year, they're a 46-win team. So can they get into that 50 to 52 range if Steph starts hitting his shots and looking like Steph Curry? I like what I see. And they're one of four teams with over 50% of their three-point shots, shots coming from three-point range. And I do think I think that's real. And if Moses Moody and Kuminga can actually have a reliable three-point shot, everything opens up for this team.
I'm with you, Tom. I mean, I think with Golden State, the way they're some of the tweaks to their offense have led to these more efficient shots. Because there's a while where, you know, early in the Golden State Warriors dynasty, they were ahead of the curve with their three-point rate. And then they fell like to the middle, lower side of the NBA as everybody else caught up. It took Kerr a little while to get the system going with shooting more threes. But now they're near the top of the league again. I think the way they've constructed the system around Steph, he's eventually going to have some of those monster games. It wouldn't shock me at all if Steph's in the conversation for MVP. Everybody's looking for who's it going to be this year. Steph, I feel like, is being a little bit overlooked in that conversation, because if the Warriors win 50, and if they're a 4 seed or a 5 seed or even a 3 seed or 2 seed, Stephen Curry will be in that conversation for most valuable player. But ultimately, Golden State made a bet with these two timelines, and they win one championship at the beginning of the two timelines approach. And then things have not looked great since then, with some ups and downs with all these young guys. But now we're at a point where you're talking about Moody and you're talking about Kuminga and pods as young players contributing alongside a ton of very good veterans. As you said, Melton, Kyle Anderson, Draymond still there, Steph still an MVP caliber player. Where maybe the two timelines approach actually was just worth the wait, and the reward could be coming this year. That's the way I feel with this current Warriors team. Those young guys need to sustain it. But Moody, you mentioned him, Tom. Moses Moody no longer looks like a guy that Steve Kerr can be keeping in the doghouse anymore. Moses Moody needs to play minutes, heavy minutes, for this Warriors team with the way he's looking right now.
100%. If there's a breakout candidate It's either him or it's Kuminga. And that's a great sign for your team if both guys could be in the running for most improved player this year. Kuminga, we saw this in the preseason last year where I got a little over my skis a little bit with Kuminga. I thought he was going to win most improved player of the year based on what we saw in the preseason, him making the leap. I still
most
think he has it in him.
Most player of the second half? Yeah. After January? I mean, like if there's a second half award, maybe he would have won that, right?
Yep. DeAndre Ayton would like a word. If he can sustain that last year, what he did in the second half, where he was basically like prime Dwight Howard. I do think that when you look at Trayce Jackson-Davis too, like mm-hmm. I like what I've seen from him in the
skinny Looney.
Skinny Looney, taller Looney. Apparently, yes. Trayce Jackson-Davis grew an inch in the offseason. Mike Dunleavy revealing that he's grown another inch. The Dale Davis genes are kicking in big time, a little later than we expected. A growth spurt from their starting center. Look, Trayce Jackson-Davis, Pods, Moses Moody, Kuminga, four really young, high potential players coming in the same way. Again, I keep saying in the same breath, the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors have almost too many good young players for this rotation. Like they go so deep. Who is Moses Moody going to play over? Like that's a real question. Is it Kyle Anderson? Is it like who is Steve Kerr going to look at the other end of the bench and be like, yeah, Moses, you take his minutes? Cause they've got really good players. Buddy Hield's look awesome. Like on that contract, who would you rather have based on what you've seen so far in the last couple of weeks? And it's only been a couple of weeks of preseason basketball, Klay Thompson or Buddy. I'm taking Buddy Hield.
I mean, Klay is still having some bomb games out there for Dallas as well. He has not had his Klay Thompson moment for the Mavericks yet. Maybe that changes. I believe they play Thursday night after we record. We'll see if he ends up playing in their finale. But right now, Buddy Hield looking like a perfect fit for that Warriors system in ways that Klay didn't towards the tail end of his Warriors career. So I'm with you with Golden State. The amount of names we've thrown out there, just good quality names, is representative of the amount of depth and options that they have. And I'm sure for Steve Kerr, there's pros and cons to that. You have all these players. Some good players are going to have to be benched at certain points. But I think it's a good problem to have for Golden State. And I'm bullish on them like you are this year. You had one other three-star team as well. That was the Denver Nuggets. That might surprise some people with Denver. But I know Adam Mades over at DNVR Sports, he said for the first time in his decade plus of covering Denver that he is lower on them than most Nuggets fans seem to be. He's more worried about them, sees them as a 5, 6, or 7 seed this year. I really respect Adam's opinion. I think he's one of the best covering the NBA doing what he does. And with you, Tom, you seem to have similar concerns about them. What do you think is holding back Denver from that favorite status as a title contender entering this season?
The depth, that second unit is really scary for me because you look at Julian Strother, Peyton Watson, Hunter Tyson. You look at these guys who are coming into this year that are trying to make a name for themselves, not just for any team, but for a title contender where you have a three-time MVP, Nikola Jokic. They lose KCP. They're trying to figure out if Christian Brown is going to fill into that spot. And then you got Russell Westbrook. The Russell Westbrook variable to me is the biggest reason that I'm bearish on the Denver Nuggets, because I do know that Michael Malone wants to lean on veterans, and Russell Westbrook is the vet guy coming off the bench for them, and he's launching threes like he's Ray Allen. I don't understand it. He's made some of them in the preseason. I don't love this.
50%, he's going to tell you, Tom, I've made half my threes. I'm a shooter.
It's not so much the 50%, it's the volume. It's like 9 threes every 36 minutes. That's really terrifying for me.
Because you know they're going to start bricking at some point. You just know it.
I mean, maybe he has this new shot doctor in the offseason that is helping him, but I don't believe it. I'll believe it when I see it, when Russell Westbrook is a good three-point shooter. You said last week he is the worst high-volume three-point shooter in NBA history. And when you look at his game, it's not just the three-point shot that I'm watching. It's his rim attacks. He's missed 6 of his 7 layups in the preseason. He doesn't seem to have the same burst or the lift. And when you lose that, when Russell Westbrook isn't able to finish at a high level around the rim, that's when the wheels come off. And I'm just worried, not just about the sustainability of that three-point shooting. I'm not buying the three-point shot. I am a little bit more concerned about the rim attacks. And he did have this nice alley-oop with Jokic in the half court, which was cool. But like the other rim attacks were not pretty. He just couldn't get off the ground in ways that we usually see with Russell Westbrook. And come playoff time, none of those guys, those names that I said earlier in the rotation, averaged more than 10 minutes a game. And most of them got DNP CDs in the postseason. And I just worry that Michael Malone's going to fall in love with Dario Saric and Russell Westbrook by default. And that scares me in their title contention status.
You know, one of the interesting things with Denver this entire preseason right now is last year they were 30th last in the NBA in three-point rate. In preseason, right now they are 8th. So they have had a dramatic rise in three-point rate. Now, on one hand, good. Like, MPJ should be shooting more threes. Jamal Murray, you could argue, should be shooting more threes. But Aaron Gordon, Christian Brown, and a lot of Russell Westbrook, even Jokic himself, a lot of these guys who are not elite shooters, Brown has bricked everything this preseason. Russ inevitably at some point will be. Aaron Gordon is not a knockdown guy. Peyton Watson is not a knockdown guy. The Nuggets have a lot of guys on this roster that aren't good shooters. And that's why they were last in three-point rate last year. They were playing to their strengths. They are not a team that's going to be taking a lot of threes. But I'm very intrigued by what Malone's doing with their shot diet this preseason when that doesn't exactly fit the roster. And I just wonder if this is going to be more of a continuation and kind of that battle between Calvin Booth in the front office and Michael Malone and the coaching staff in terms of the philosophy of this team. I reported after they got eliminated in the playoffs earlier this year, some of the stuff that happened, but the friction between them, the quotes, the passive aggressiveness from Malone towards the front office. Zach Lowe on his podcast said earlier this summer how, you know, he's heard some things about brewing between them as well. I wonder if this is going to be something that Booth is going to have to address the roster in order to fit the way Malone wants to play. If the rookies and the young guys aren't contributing, and if some of the veterans aren't shooting threes at the level that they need to, they're going to have to make roster changes. Like, you're going to have to do something big. Trading MPJ, I don't know. Flipping.
Who are they going to trade? It's Jamal Murray on that contract?
It's just MPJ. That's it. It's MPJ. Man. MPJ, is he a Rockets target maybe? MPJ for picks?
Yeah, but Jabari, I kind of feel like you get maybe 70% Mike MPJ, you know? So it's just, to me, Denver, what's interesting about Denver is the alignment between the front office and the coaching staff. There's no alignment. And then the Russell Westbrook thing is really interesting. Like, they reported that, you know, Nikola Jokic really wanted Russell Westbrook. And I'm just like, I don't see that. I don't understand that.
I've heard he did. I've heard that he really did. I've heard that Jokic, it's like one of the few times he's really stomped down his foot and said, I want to play with Russ. I've heard that he legitimately wanted. I know it doesn't. But I guess, like, Russ, I've heard, was really kind to Jokic in the past. They had a good relationship when Jokic was an all-star, I think, for the first time, that Russ and Jokic bonded a bit at the time. And so Jokic, if you're Jokic and you throw every pass with pinpoint precision and throughout your entire life, everybody that plays with you is the best version of themselves, you probably think I can turn Russ into the best version of himself at this stage of his career. Why would you not if you're Jokic? But LeBron James thought that. Everybody has thought that and has not worked out. And it's not going to work for Denver either. Russell Westbrook, unless his newfound shot this preseason after, you know, an entire career of bricking behind the three-point line and from mid-range, if suddenly it's fixed, great, it's going to work. Awesome. But it's not. It's just a little hot streak, and I'm not a believer there. And I'd worry, like you, about this Denver team, Tom.
Well, there is some stickiness to the three-point rate in terms of volume, and that's what worries me again about Russell Westbrook launching him like he's Chris Paul, like that kind of shooting percentage, or Chauncey or something like that. I don't think that Russell Westbrook should be shooting 8 threes a game. I think no one's guarding him for a reason. But Owen Phillips is one of the best analytical minds that we have in the NBA media. He launched the F5 Substack a couple years ago and worked for the New York Knicks. He's been posting a little bit in the preseason about the things that are sticky in the preseason for the regular season. Statistically, your team's three-point rate, the volume of three-pointers is very sticky. So this Denver Nuggets team that is shooting more threes as a team, that might be a signal that Michael Malone understood. Look, we gotta space the floor. We gotta launch from three, have a more modern shot profile with this team. There are four teams, like I said earlier, that had 50% or more of their shots coming from beyond the arc. The number one team, KOC, is not going to be a surprise. The Boston Celtics, the five-out system, Mazzulla, and the rest of the, even though they don't have Porzingis out there in the preseason, they're launching them more than any team, I think, in NBA history. Preseason numbers be damned. They're 55% of their shots are coming from three-point range.
Crazy.
55%. Crazy. Okay. I'm going to give you the other three names here. We talked
Atlanta,
about Golden
Atlanta's
State.
One of them, right? Atlanta won.
Nope. Atlanta's just outside of this 50% rate. Phoenix, 51%. Mike Budenholzer has always been leading the charge in terms of five out. Al Horford, of course, Brooke Lopez, trying to get the five man to shoot. This is also across the board with Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker. They're launching them in Phoenix. And this was like a bottom 10 team in terms of three-point rate last year. And I think, you know, I'm kind of bearish on the Phoenix Suns, and I've been vocal about that. Last week we talked about it, but Mike Budenholzer does have a much healthier shot profile with this team, shooting 51% of their shots from beyond the arc. Golden State, 51%. The other one, the Charlotte Hornets. Mm. Charles Lee, who worked under both Mazzulla and Mike Budenholzer, has 50% of his Hornets shots coming from beyond the arc. They're kind of a sleeper team in the Eastern Conference. If LaMelo Ball is healthy and Brandon Miller can continue that development and their shot profile, I mean, I might be a homer here because I'm based in Charlotte, but I like what I've seen from them so far.
One of my, not to step on the predictions episode next week on Tuesday, but one of my predictions will be the Charlotte Hornets make the playoffs. That's one of them.
I love it.
I'm a believer in the Hornets. I wrote earlier this week on Yahoo Sports about Brandon Miller as a breakout candidate. I know some people are like, oh, he's a second year player. How can he be a breakout candidate? Well, you can be a breakout candidate if you become an all-star caliber player. That's how you can be a breakout guy in your second year. And Brandon Miller, what he's done in this preseason, 20 plus points twice. He had 26 points on Wednesday night, looked absolutely dominant playing with LaMelo Ball. One of my concerns that I had about those two was, if you look at last season, like touches for Brandon Miller, he touched the ball like double the time after LaMelo went out in late January. That happened to, you know, align when Brandon Miller started to ascend, when the season started to blossom for him. But there was a play earlier this week that gave me so much hope for what Brandon Miller and LaMelo Ball could be together. There was a moment where LaMelo Ball came over and set a good hard screen for Brandon Miller. Not one of those like fake ghost screens, like where he just runs past them. He set a good hard screen for Brandon Miller. Miller drove, Ball popped, Miller kicked it out, and then he relocated and Ball drove and kicked it out to Miller for a three. And it was just this gorgeous two-man game between these two guys who have size and they're selfless and they have shooting and driving ability, and it worked. And it was beautiful. And I'm like, wait a second. These two guys are going to be able to do this all season long together and develop even more chemistry. And I just think Brandon Miller and LaMelo, they're both going to be maybe not all-stars, but borderline all-stars. LaMelo has been an all-star before. Brandon Miller is on that trajectory to be that type of player. The Hornets are one of the bright future teams in the NBA right now, without a doubt. They have depth. They have upside guys. Trey Mann crushing off the bench for them. Like you said, Charles Lee, their new head coach, seems to be developing a system that is putting these players in positions to thrive. I'm high on the Hornets. I'm very high on the Hornets. So good for you to have them in your backyard, Tom, this year.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to see as much as I'd like because I am doing the broadcast for the Blazers, and that's keeping me occupied for much of the regular season.
Late nights for you, huh?
It's you know what, when I look, you mentioned DeAndre Ayton earlier with his 3-point shot. That's like one of my most intriguing storylines of the season because of the Brooke Lopez factor. When you're money as DA is in the mid range, you're shooting 55% around there in the mid range automatic right up there with DeMar DeRozan, KD, Kawhi. He was there all season long, and now he's stepping out for threes. I'm just like, okay, I'm very intrigued now if DA can start hitting threes. And admittedly, that's not like the number one storyline of the NBA going into this year. But I'm telling you, for people at home, just be ready for DeAndre Ayton to just start dominating from the three-point line. That's right. I said it.
And then you got Donovan Clingan as well. Another seven-footer shooting threes as well. We'll see if he can be knocked down. But good for DA. He can now seriously start using the dominating thing if he continues doing what he did to close last season. I love DA. He's such a fun, man. Lovable guy.
I got to say, what he did in the second half of last year, that's kind of what everybody was hoping for with DA, where he is assertive, he's aggressive, he's playing big. And if he can have a little bit of floor spacing ability, that's going to really help Scoot Henderson get into the paint. So, you know, they've got four centers, legit centers on their squad, and they all offer very different things. Dwap Reith is a great five, floor spacing five. Robert Williams III, I don't need to tell you, KOC, what he can bring to a team when he's healthy. And then Clingan, man, dude is huge. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to always cape for a Connecticut guy myself. This is a four-man center, four-headed center position that is really interesting for Portland this year. And I do think that DA, if he can space the floor, that's going to be so big for their offense.
On your title tiers, you have three four-star teams, the Knicks, the Wolves, and the Mavs. I think those are all very fair. We've talked about those teams pretty in depth already on this podcast. You have two five-star teams, the Celtics and the Thunder. You've said the Thunder are your favorite to win the finals. The Celtics obviously belong there as well. Of those four-star teams, I'm curious, Tom, between the Knicks, the Wolves, and the Mavericks, which of those three teams do you feel like has the best chance to become that five-star team at some point over the course of the season of those three?
I think it's the Knicks. I think the Knicks, defensively, you have questions with Cat up the middle, but their wing defenders, Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby, are, they're second to none. In terms of perimeter defenders on the same squad, that it's ridiculous what they can do together. I'm so interested to see, you know, Cat offensively and Tom Thibodeau's system, what he can do. I think the New York Knicks, in terms of their big five, it's as impressive as any starting five in the NBA. It's just they got to stay healthy. And if they are healthy and Jalen Brunson can be that kind of... I know he was an MVP candidate last year. I think he was fifth in the MVP rating. But I do think he has another level that he can get to, that if he was healthy in the postseason last year, the consistency of him being a 30-point scorer in today's NBA, if he can do that with Cat and the wings on this team, and Deuce McBride, man, they're going to be great. I think they have the best chance of being a five-star.
I'm with you. I had Deuce McBride, a blurb on him on Yahoo Sports earlier this week, and the context of who are some guys that could have breakout years. So you had the Knicks. They trade Emmanuel Quickly and RJ Barrett to get OG Anunoby last year. That's in part a bet on them believing that DiVincenzo and McBride could do more. They did. Now you trade DiVincenzo and you get Karl Anthony Towns and the deal. That's also a bet on Deuce McBride again being able to do more with more minutes, more opportunity. I'm a believer in Deuce. I think he could be a sixth man of the year candidate this year. Wouldn't shock me with his two-way abilities, because not only is he a bucket getter, but he's a really tough, hard-nosed defender at the point of attack. So, hey, if you're looking for some good value bets out there, Deuce McBride as sixth man of the year is one of the ones that I really like out there right now. But I'm with you on the Knicks, Tom. You've got a podcast launching with Yahoo Sports, so I hear. You're doing everything. You got The Finder with Tom Haverstraw. You're doing the Blazers broadcast. You got Basketball Illuminati. You got a bunch of stuff. And now you also have a podcast launching with Yahoo Sports. Is this true? Are the rumors true, Tom?
It is true. The big number is going to be Yahoo Sports, not just as a video product, but now it's going to be expanded into a bigger platform in a podcast. So Dan Devine and I are going to be doing one stat, one storyline every week that we think is going to be super underrated. And we're going to go deep on one player, one team, one stat, one trend that you're going to need to know to become a smarter NBA fan. So one time a week, I am going to give you the big number that I think is the most underrated trend or most important stat of the week. And that's going to be every week at Yahoo Sports. I'm excited to expand on the big number, Bram.
That launching next week?
That's right.
Next week on Thursdays.
That's correct. Thursdays at Yahoo Sports, the big number. Thank you for reminding me what day it is of the week. I don't even know. I mean, on top of that, I got two kids at home. Thank you for reminding me which day it was going to come out on the week. Thank you, KOC.
I mean, during NBA season, the podcast schedule is the only thing that makes me know what day it is. Other than that, days just blend together a lot of the time. That is my internal calendar, as I have a podcast recording tomorrow morning or tonight.
That's it. It's no longer like the moon or the sunset. It's like, when is my podcast recording? This was awesome again, and I'm very, very excited to be in the rotation. I'm hugely honored to be part of this, and thanks for having me again this week.
Appreciate it, Tom. You'll be back again next Friday. Appreciate you joining the show today. Thanks to John and our production staff for putting the show together. Appreciate you listening. Please give us a 5-star rating. Please send us an email with a video or a voice note with your predictions for next week's mailbag. That'll be coming out on Tuesday. That's KOC Show at yahoosports.com. Appreciate you listening. Enjoy the rest of the preseason. Enjoy your weekend, and see you next week.